to the big questions here. Tonight, as you see in the handout, the big question, the reasons for mitzvot, the reasons for why we do so many mitzvot, because Judaism is a religion of mitzvot. We live by commands. There's 613 commands. There are so many mitzvot. And the question I want to address tonight is, why do we do mitzvot? Why did God command for us to do mitzvot? What is God's intention when he gives us so many mitzvot? Is God saying to us, here are a bunch of decrees. I am the king and you listen to me. Is that what it is? It's just we listen because God commands us? Or does each and every mitzvah have something in it that's supposed to teach us a lesson, supposed to give us some sort of guidance to allow us to live our life in a more uplifted and holier way? Why did God command mitzvot again? Is it for God? So God can say, you're my subjects, you're my people? Or is it for us? That is the big question of tonight. This question can be put a little differently, and that is the idea of tamei hamitzvos. Tamei hamitzvos means the reason for mitzvos. Are there reasons for mitzvos? That's a little striking. You ask about the reasons for mitzvos, you would hope the reason for mitzvos. We spend so much time doing mitzvos. Are there reasons for mitzvos? So in fact, that's a debate. There's a debate. Are we supposed to involve ourselves in trying to find out what are the reasons for mitzvos? There are some rabbis who say, yes, spend your time, look into the reason for mitzvos, delve into them, and hopefully come up with a reason for them. And there are other rabbis who are going to tell us not to look into them. Not look into them. That's a little striking. Why should we not look into the reason for mitzvos? I should just shake my lulav and not have a reason for it? It's a little funny. So what I want to do tonight is A, look a little into the risks of looking into the reason for mitzvos. And then we are going to look at a debate, an old debate, to see do mitzvahs even have reasons or do they not have reasons? So that's what we're going to do tonight. Two different approaches. Source number one. It's from Devarim Yud Zayin, Deuteronomy 17. Rak la'yir lo yirbo lo susiv lo yoshev es ha'am yimitzrayim leman harbo sus v'ashem omar leichem lo tisifu lo shubba derech hazeh ot. God is commanding us that when we anoint a king, when Klal Yisrael chooses to have a king to rule over us, that king is not above the law. By the way, I chose this way before anything happened in the world. Don't make your own assumptions here. Even a king, the law applies to him. And God is telling us that specifically a person in power, power has the ability to corrupt them. And therefore, there are certain specific laws to pertain to the leader, to the ruler, to the king. One of them is a king cannot have too many horses. Why can't they have too many horses? What's wrong with horses? So in the ancient world, a horse was essentially a sign of power. They didn't have cars, so instead of driving around a fancy BMW, they drove around a fancy horse that said BMW stamped on the side of it, or whatever fancy horse they had. A horse was a sign of power. A horse is the way you got around. A horse was the way you waged war. A king is forbidden to have too many horses because he has to be careful that with the horses, with power, with money, he has the ability to be corrupted. A king as well cannot have too many wives because in the ancient world, the way you make treaties with other countries is the kings would get married and they'd have multiple wives. King can have too many wives, says the Torah, because we don't want him to be led astray. That's the Torah. Comes along the Talmud in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and says, Omer Rav Yitzchak, mifnei ma lo nizgalu tamei Torah. He asks our question. He says, I'm assuming God gave reasons for each and every precept, each and every mitzvah. But if you go through the Torah, rarely do we find the Torah telling us, this is why you should do this mitzvah or that mitzvah. Why did the Torah not give us the reason? He says, because the Torah does give us the reason in a few places, and it went terribly wrong. The Torah tells us a king should not have too many horses. Along comes Shlomo HaMelech, right? We all know Shlomo HaMelech, the great King Solomon. King Solomon was known for his wisdom. He was the one, the famous story. Two women come in, say there's a baby. One says, this is my baby. The other one says, no, it's my baby. King Solomon pulls out a sword and says, I will cut the baby in half. And each one, you can go home with half a baby. And one mother protests and says, no, just give that lady, the other lady, the baby. And the other mother says, yeah, do that. That's a good idea. And King Solomon in his wisdom said, you who wanted to cut the baby in half, you're clearly not the real mother, because any mother knows and would prefer to lose their baby rather than have their baby cut in half. There happens to be a different version of the story. This was not found in the Tanakh. It's not found in Midrashim. It's found in the outside sources. Two women walk to come to King Solomon. They knock on the door. They come in. He says, "Why are you here?" We say, "We're in a quarrel. We're in a debate." So what's your debate about? They said, "Come in." In walks a young man. And one of the ladies says, "That man is supposed to marry my daughter." And the other one says, "No, no, no, no. That man's supposed to marry my daughter." And King Solomon says, in his wisdom, he pulls out a sword. He says, "I will cut the man in half. And each one of you can walk out with half his man." So one mother immediately protests and says, "No, no, 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 no. Don't cut him in half." And the other one says, "No, cut him in half." And King Solomon, in his wisdom, turns to the one and says, "Cut him in half," and says, "You're the real mother-in-law." So that one's found in the outside sources. But that's King Solomon. So we know King Solomon, a wise man. King Solomon reads this verse. He reads this pasuk, and he says, it says you can't have too many wives or too many horses because you'll be led astray. He goes, "I'm King Solomon. I'm not going to be led astray. I'm good." And so he had too many wives. He got too many horses. And what happens? The verse tells us, the Nach tells us that unfortunately at the end of his life, he was led astray. They ended up having a little rebellion, which ended up splitting the two different kingdoms because King Solomon was a little too wise, perhaps. And he said, "I'm going to be okay." So says Rav Yitzchak, because of this, God did not reveal the reasons for mitzvahs, because when you reveal the reason for something, that opens up the door for someone to say, "Well, that doesn't apply to me. I'm good. I'm okay. God, you tell me I can't eat treif, I can't eat not kosher because it's going to be bad for me. Well, I'll exercise a lot. It'll be fine for me." What this is known in the philosophical jargon is a theological reason, oriented mitzvah. Theological means goal-oriented. Anytime you make a mitzvah goal-oriented, if I say, let's choose a lofty goal, the reason I'm going to do this, you know, such and such mitzvah is because it's going to bring me closer to God. God says, "You should pray every day because that will make you close to me." Well, if I can say to myself, "Okay, God, if the whole goal is for me to be close to you," well, I'll be honest. Going to the synagogue, going to shul, and backing up three times, and backing up three times, and doing the whole motions, I don't feel close to you. I'm just thinking about whatever's on my mind. And again, we all know what's on everyone's minds right now. I don't think of God. He goes, "God, I feel much closer to you if I meditate, or I play guitar, or I eat chalent and a nice and shawarma and, you know, good Israeli food. And I really feel genuinely close to you, God." So what essentially I can say is, if the whole point of the mitzvah is for me to feel close to you, so why do the mitzvah? I'll do something else that brings me close to you. So you run that risk when you open up and allow for the mitzvahs to be goal-oriented. This also opens up the possibility that, let's say I give a reason and the reason is not compelling or no longer compelling, which we find. Sometimes the Rambam will give a reason. He'll say, for instance, why is there kashrus? Why is there kosher? Why can't you mix milk and meat together? Because milk and meat isn't healthy together. And as Jews, we're supposed to be healthy. Well, I think everyone here knows, eating that kishka and that kugel that's been left out for 3 weeks that's served at the kiddush is a lot more unhealthy than eating milk and meat together. So maybe in the times of the Rambam, science dictated then, he thought, he was a doctor, by the way, so it was healthier, but we clearly know that kosher food, I mean, look at us Jews. We're not exactly the thin people running around. So it doesn't work. So again, when you give a reason for things, you can ultimately undermine that mitzvah, that precept, because you're like, it's false. And it also opens up the world of antinomianism. Antinomianism is a term, which I'll tell you the Webster's Dictionary, the way they say it. It's one who holds that under the gospel dispensation of grace, the moral law is no use or obligation because faith alone is necessary to salvation. Antinomianism. Meaning, if it's all about getting closer to God, if it's all about feeling this religious, you know, having this religious fervor, so I can feel that in ways outside of whatever mitzvah you want to, again, shaking that really expensive lemon, which is not a lemon, and that willow in the pot, it's like, I don't feel that then. I feel it in other ways. So because of that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Rav Yitzchak says, the Torah does not reveal the reason for mitzvot. So if you look at Rashi, source number 3, the middle of the commentator says, meaning what? Kagon lama, it's bold there. Lama nesu levisha shatnes, v'achilas chazer, ukuyotzbim. Why did the Torah forbid one to wear woolen, to forbid one to wear woolen linen together. Why does Torah say you can't eat chaz, you can't eat pig? Torah doesn't say so because we don't, you know, if we come up with a reason which doesn't work or whatever, all these risks, we run the afoul of perhaps not then keeping these precepts. So that would be a reason why, that would be a reason why we wouldn't want to investigate Tameh HaMitzvos. We wouldn't want to investigate the reason for mitzvos. However, what if I can tell you there is someone out there who says there are no reasons for mitzvos? There are no reasons for mitzvos. What does that even mean? So let's look at source number four. It's the Talmud in Brachos. It's also a Gemara in Megillah. And it's as follows. Ha'omer al kan tzipor yagiyu rachamecha. A person says, al kan tzipor yagiyu rachamecha mishaken oso. The context of the Gemara is, the Gemara is describing when you go to shul, when we go to daven, so we daven shmoneh esrei, we have the private amida, and then the cantor, the shliach tzibur, gets up there and repeats the amida. This is very, very old. Again, the times of the Gemara, they were doing this. And oftentimes, they would insert things into the private shmoneh esrei, which would be then read out loud. And depending on if the person was willing to read it, they would know what his beliefs are. Meaning, in the times of the Second Temple, there were the tzedukim, people who did not believe in the oral law. And so they inserted a 19th bracha into Shmoneh Esrei Vil Malshinim, or the actual lesson is Vil Aminim, Min, and it was a blessing telling God, please eradicate the people who do not believe in the oral law from our midst. And if someone were to get up there and they'd skip it, they would know, oh, they must be a tzeduki, they must not be someone who's authentic, and they'd kick them out. So a person gets up there now, and he says, Al kan tzipor yagiyu rachamecha. The person is praising God. He's saying, God, you're amazing. God, you're wonderful. God, I love you. Reading the psuk, reading the Shmoneh Esrei. And then he stops and he says, God, you're so wonderful. You even commanded us to send away the mother bird in order for us to take the egg. The halacha is, the pasuk tells us, if one wants to take an egg or wants to take a little chick to eat, they cannot do it in front of the mother bird. They have to send the mother bird away. And this person says, God, you're so merciful. Your mercy extends to the bird. You don't want the bird to be in pain. You have mercy for the mother bird, so we send the bird away before we take the chicks. God, you're wonderful. Says the Mishnah, Mishaken Oso. We silence him. We say, get out of here. Get out of here. You're not allowed to say that. And just to highlight it, by the way, about 2 months ago, Rav David Feinstein passed away. And I was reading one of the obituaries for him. I believe it was Rabbi Tzvi Ram, who's a rabbi in the Lower East Side. He's a rabbi there for the last like 13 or 14 years. So he was very close to Rav David Feinstein, who lived in the Lower East Side. And he mentioned how one time during Chazaras HaShatz, there was a young boy reading, and he kept on mispronouncing words and even skipping words. So normally when that happens is you tell the person to stop and go back, or you're skipping a word. Rav David Feinstein didn't say anything. So someone walked up to Matthew. By the way, all rabbinic stories, there's always that one, the chutzif, who walks up and asks the rabbi why they're doing this. So someone walks up to him after, and he says, Rabbi Feinstein, you know the halacha better than me. Am I missing something? Like, he skipped words. And Rabbi Feinstein responded, it's worse to embarrass someone in public than to miss a word or two in Shmoneh Esrei. So we don't lightly kick someone off the amud. We don't lightly say, sit down. But here we have a guy who's saying, God, your mercy extends to the birds. You're wonderful. You're amazing. This guy is trying to praise God. And we say, quiet, silence. Why? Why is that? So the Gemara there records source number five. My time. Why do we silence him? Deplegi batrei amarai b'marabah. So two amarayim, two rabbis in the West, in Israel, argue. Rav Yossi bar Oven, Rav Yossi bar Zvida. One of them says, because he's creating jealousy in God's works. He's saying, God, you favor the bird, this bird, more than other animals. There are all sorts of animals in the world, and why is he just choosing to care about the pain of the mother bird? We're going to leave that for now. That's the topic of a different shir, but that's one answer. The one we're going to focus on is the next answer. The Chad Omar, Mipnei, because he makes the midah, the character traits, the laws of God into rachamim, into mercy, the ein on ela gezeros. And the laws of God are decrees. They're not about mercy. They're not about love and kindness. They're decrees. Don't tell me the reason for them. Don't tell me God cares about the mother bird. That's not our concern. God commanded us, if you want the chick, send away the mother bird. And there's nothing to praise God here about his mercy extending to birds. That's not what's going on here. And if you look at Rashi here, Rashi says, Midaso, v'hu lo rachamim. These mitzvos are not rachamim. They're not merciful. Elohat el Yisrael chuki gezeros. God commands us to give us decrees. Lo di Hashem avodot. Because when we respond, if you respond to the decrees and you do what God says, you show, therefore, that you are a servant. God's the master. We're the servant. V'shomer mitzvos v'gezeros and chukosef. And by keeping the mitzvos, by keeping these gezeros and chukim, we are demonstrating our loyalty to God who commanded us. And that's even the response when the Satan, when Satan or the people of the world come to us. A couple of years ago, it made the news. There was a man walking around in a residential area carrying a rifle. So they called the police. And the police show up there. Turns out the guy was carrying a lulav. They didn't know. And you can laugh. Why do we do that? Such a weird concept. What are we doing? Many, many things that we do can be looked at as strange. No, not at least waving a chicken around our head and our Yom Kippur. But there's so many things we can do. That's not actually a mitzvah, so we won't use that example. Sitting in the sukkah, we go in the fall, we go into this freezing hut. By the way, I always notice, we say it's the fall, it's cold. It's either boiling hot and there are bees flying around everywhere, or it's freezing. It's never like that nice fall weather. That 1 week it skips. So we're in the sukkah and we're trying to eat our soup and there's like leaves falling inside. And for those of you who have allergies, you know what Gehenna's like. And like the wind is blowing, it's like Hurricane Sandy, and everyone's walking, all the people walking by are like, what's wrong with these Jews? I mean, we know they're crazy, but this is nuts. And the response, according to Rashi, is we don't say, oh, you know why we're sitting in the sukkah, and we give a nice, beautiful explanation. You know, don't you know the late Rabbi Sacks always said, sitting in the sukkah is learning to celebrate life in trying times. That when you sit in the sukkah, you could be happy. Chag Simcha Seinu was the month of the week of happiness, and you can be happy even though it's uncertain. Is it going to start raining? Is that part of the schach which I'm using like a toothpick to hold up? Is that going to come collapsing on me? And you can still be happy. So you learn to celebrate God and celebrate life in happy times. We don't tell them that. We don't tell them all these beautiful things. You know, when I'm sitting in the sukkah next week when I go into my house, I'm going to appreciate that roof so much more. We say to them, God commanded us. God commanded us. I don't want to hear from you. That's what I'm doing. It's a command. It's a decree. That's what Rashi says. That's a response. And we just say, we are loyal. End of story. And if you look, he says it again in Megillah. He says, V'ein el gezeres melech, source number 7. Lahat lev ola. He used the word, mitzvos are a yoke. The way a cow has a yoke around its neck, and that's the way you guide it. So they're a yoke. L'hodiyah shenachto avadu v'sharmi mitzvos. And it's the way that we demonstrate to the world and demonstrate to God, we are loyal. He commands, and we follow. We don't ask questions. We're going to look at two more sources that we'll say them outside that demonstrate as well this approach that mitzvos are just gezeros, mitzvos are decrees. And if you're sitting there saying, this is I'm a little uneasy with this. I want to celebrate life in trying times. I don't want to think I'm sitting in the sukkah and it's just because I'm demonstrating loyalty. So we're going to get to another approach. But as always, for those who are new to this year, we try to find meaning in all approaches because I think there is meaning in this approach as well. Gracious Rabbah. So the Medrash records, you think God cares, says the Medrash, whether when we slaughter an animal, we do it on the back of the neck or the front of the neck. God doesn't care. If God really cared about animals and animal cruelty, he wouldn't let us slaughter the animals at all. He'd say, be vegetarian or eat the animal when it drops dead. I don't recommend that. It's probably salmonella. But he says, so why did God give us the give us mitzvos? Lo nitnu ha-mitzvos el tzarif b'hemes abrios. The mitzvos were given to purify us. The way one has metal, and you have metal, you want to make it pure metal, so you get rid of the impurities by burning it in fire. Mitzvos are there to purify us. It's not about the reason behind each mitzvah, but it's to purify us. One more source before we go on to the next approach. It's the Torah in Yaradea. The Torah, the Aber Turim, he was the one of the founders, if you want to call it, of halacha, in the sense that he decided to go, he went through all of all of the Gemara and all the Rambams, and he basically organized halacha in the way we have it nowadays. The Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, is based off the Torah. In fact, his first commentary was a commentary on the Torah, and then he wrote the Shulchan Aruch. The Torah is talking about hakafas harosh. There's a prohibition to cut off one's payas, one's sideburns. You cannot totally shave with a razor your entire face or your sideburns, wherever those may be. It's again the machlokas. Doesn't mean you have to have things hanging down. If you want to, call a kavod. Now, the Torah says the following. The Rambam, the great Rambam Maimonides, who we're about to meet in a minute, although we know him, we're friends with him already, we kind of quote him every single week. He says, you know why God forbade us from shaving with a razor on our whole face and doing leaving the payas out? Why did he do that? Because he didn't, back then, the Sabian priests, the ancient idolatrous priests, that's what they would do. And God wanted us to distinguish ourselves from the Sabian priests, and therefore he forbade us from doing that. Which, by the way, note one, you see, you'll say to yourself now, well, the Sabians don't exist, so maybe we should do away with this precept, do away with this prohibition, which again is highlights the risk involved. And number two, says the Torah, we don't care. You can give me whatever reason in the world you want. Maybe you can claim, I don't know, God doesn't like razors. He always he cuts himself with it, so he forbade for everyone else. I don't care the reason. Why do we do mitzvos? Ki mitzvos melachim aleinu aflo no datamen. We don't know the reason. God commands, we obey. End of story. So that's the first. We have this Gemara that tells us if a person gets up there and says, God, you're amazing, you're wonderful, you have mercy that extends all the way to the birds, mishakan oso. We silence him. Why? Because he's making God's commands mercy, and they're really just decrees. As Rashi says, they're an all atzavaro, they're a yoke on us. Mitzvahs are about showing that we have fidelity to God's command. Now we have approach number two. The Rambam, Maimonides, who we've already alluded to a couple times. Rabbi Dr. Maimonides, he was a doctor, he was a rabbi, meaning he was every mother's dream. Although he was actually the right type of doctor. My grandfather has a PhD. So the legend is, when he got his PhD, his mother said, you became a doctor, just the wrong type of doctor. I don't know if this is true. I won't question it. The Rambam was a medical doctor. And he basically sets up the following question. Source number 10, in the Mor Nevuchim. What's the Mor Nevuchim? So we've alluded to it in the past. We've discussed it in the past. A student wrote him a letter, asked him a couple questions, and he responded essentially with a book. If someone responds to one of my emails with more than like four lines, I usually ignore it, but I say thank you. This student must have had a lot of patience, or maybe he didn't read it either. We don't know. No, he definitely read it. So in the Mor Nevuchim, in the latter half of it, book three, it's three parts, he basically spends a lot of time developing the reasons behind all the different mitzvos, and he discusses everything. But he sets up the question that we've been discussing. This is in book three, chapter 26. As theologians are divided on the question whether the actions of God are the result of his wisdom or only of his will without being intended for any purpose whatever. So they are also divided regards the object of the commandments which God gave us. Some of them hold that the commandments have no object at all and are all dictates by the will of God. Others are of the opinion that all commandments and prohibitions are dictated by his wisdom and serve a certain aim. Consequently, there's a reason for each and every one of the precepts. They are enjoined because they are useful. Again, he's setting up the question. There are those who say, God commands, there's no reason. He just wants to show us to prove that we are loyal. And those say, no, no. God in his wisdom gave us mitzvahs where we can understand the reason for each and every reason for the mitzvah. And therefore, all of us, the common people as well as the scholars, believe that there is a reason for every precept. Second paragraph. The Rambam says immediately, black and white, we are of the opinion that when God gives us a mitzvah, there is definitely a reason behind it. Although there are commandments, the reason for which is unknown to us, and in which the ways of God's wisdom are incomprehensible. But our sages generally do not think that such precepts have no cause whatever and serve no purpose. For this would lead us to assume that God's actions are purposeless. Says the Rambam, this is very important for the Maimonidean thought, there are going to be times where we don't know the reason, but that's not to say there is no reason. We have limited intellect. We don't always have the ability to grasp it, but if we worked hard enough, eventually we can probably come up with the reason. Because each and every one has a reason, because if they did not have a reason, essentially we're saying, God, you just created a purposeless Torah. Like, did you really need 613 different ways to tell us, show me obedience? It's a little bit much, says the Rambam. On the contrary, they hold that even those ordinances have a cause and are certain intended for some use, although it is not known to us, owing either to the deficiency of our knowledge or the weakness of our intellect. For as it has become necessary to eat the flesh of animals, it was intended by the above regulations to ensure an easy death and effected by suitable means. Whilst decapitation requires a sword or a similar instrument, the shechita can be performed with an instrument. In order to ensure an easy death, our sage instructed that knife should be well sharpened. He gives one analogy. If you look at the laws of shechita, of slaughtering an animal, you have to use a knife. The knife has to be extremely sharp, so sharp that if there's a nip in the knife, it's not a good, it's an invalid shechita. It has to be done in the part of the animal, the trachea and the esophagus. All these, he says, and you can't put pressure or too much pressure. All these are created and intended to make as merciful and painless of a death as possible. Meaning, once you assume you can eat animals, which we all, most of us do, so the laws of shechita, you can't just decapitate an animal. You can't even use a knife that has a nick in it, because that nick can pull the animal and cause excess pain. Each and every precept has a reason, says the Rambam. Look at source number 48, because now here's the following question. If that is true, well, 1 minute, Rabbi Rambam, what happened to our Gemara that said if a person gets up and says, Lakan Sipur Yagi Rachamefa, a person says, God's mercy extends to the bird, Meshakinosa, why are we quieting him? Why are we kicking him away off? He's just doing what Rambam told us to do. So he's going to address that. Look at the second paragraph in 48. It is also prohibited to kill an animal with its young on the same day. In order that people should be restrained and prevented from killing the two together in such a manner that the young is slain in the sight of the mother. For the pain of animals under such circumstances is very great. And this is actually a true thing that's documented. Elephants have been documented to grieve for lost members of the elephant tribe. They're called a tribe. All animals have different names. I don't know what their group is called. But when it died, they've been documented up to 3 days. They stay with the dead and they grieve over. Animals have emotional pain. And the Torah tells us that one is not allowed to slaughter a mother and its calf, mother cow and its calf, on the same day. Why? Because if you slaughter the baby in front of the mother because you want your veal, you're going to cause excess pain to the mother. So the Rambam is telling us that each and every mitzvah is there to give us a certain sense of sensitivity, inculcates certain values within us. Although I'll point out there's a Chubas Rashba or Shlomo Ben Aderet who says, like, I don't think this works, Rabbi Rambam, because the way day works is, in, you know, right before Shabbos, I can't shecht it. 5 minutes later, well, that Shabbos is wrong to you. It's Tzeisuk Ochavim, it's nightfall, I could shecht it. Merely an hour apart, I can slaughter it. But in the morning, I'm not allowed to slaughter, and then can't slaughter. In the morning, I can slaughter, but then afternoon, I can't slaughter. Meaning it doesn't really work, he says. Like, if I slaughter the mother, the baby, at 9 o'clock, I can't slaughter at 3 o'clock. But if I slaughter at 3 o'clock, I can slaughter the mother at, you know, 5 o'clock after nightfall. So he's already given us reason. Like, the Rambam, your reason doesn't really work out. But the point is that the Rambam is really going to work hard to find a reason behind each and every mitzvah, each and every precept, each and every command, to tell us there's a value behind it. We're supposed to learn something from it. When we shake that lulav, it's supposed to teach us something. We see in the sukkah, we should be learning to celebrate life in trying times, whatever beautiful explanation Rabbi Sachs gives. The same applies. This is the important part, because now he's going to talk about Shluch HaKain, sending the mother bird away, because he has some explaining to do. The same reason applies to the law that which enjoins that we should let the mother fly away when we take the young. The eggs over which the bird sits and the young that are indeed of their mother are generally unfit for food. And when the mother is sent away, she does not see the taking of her young ones and does not feel any pain. In most cases, however, this command will cause man to leave the whole nest untouched because the young of eggs, which is not allowed to take, are as a rule unfit for food. If the law provides that such grief should not be caused. So again, he says the reason for it is about the mercy for the bird. And then he says, if the law provides that such grief should not be caused to cattle or birds, how much more careful must we be with that we should not cause grief to our fellow man? How much more careful should we be when it comes to fellow man? There's a comedian, Rabbi Yisrael Campbell. So he said, he once said to himself, if Judaism cares so much so much about the feelings of inanimate objects, of the challah, that it doesn't get embarrassed, of the Hanukkah candle, that you should light one over the other so you'll give it more opportunity, of birds. How much does Judaism care about people? He said he found out not too much. But no, he was joking. What the Rambam's driving at is, think about it, if we really care about animals, kal v'chomer, certainly we care about feelings of human beings. Ah, so then what happens to our Talmud in Brachos, our Talmud in Megillah? What happens to that Gemara? When the Talmud, those are blamed who use in their prayer the phrase, thy mercy extend to young birds. It is the expression of the one of the two opinions mentioned by us, namely that the precepts of the law have no reason but the divine will. We follow the other opinion. And then the Rambam does something very technical. He says, what happened to the Gemara? Don't worry. As we opened up with, the Rambam says there are two opinions. Some say to investigate the meaning behind it, and some say not to. That Talmud and Brachos, that's going according to the opinion that says you should not investigate the law. But we, everyone, simple people to wise people, said the Rambam, we don't follow that. We follow the other opinion. We should investigate. And therefore, each and every mitzvah, the Rambam really spends a tremendous amount of time, pages and pages, investigating and trying to find out the meaning behind each and every mitzvah. So that when you do a mitzvah, it shouldn't just be a shallow act of shaking, but you should be learning some sort of lesson from it. Some shallow act of putting on tefillin, or shallow, you put it on, but no, when you put on the tefillin in the morning, it invokes certain memories, thinking about God, thinking about the big picture, etc., etc. You know, he goes on, why do we get tzedakah? It should be about building society. There's meaning and value and ideals behind each and every mitzvah. So, we're all good. All is good and well. We have Rashi, Tor, the school of thought, don't investigate. Mitzvahs and Arlat Savaro. As the Gemara says, a person set out to Katsip Yagi Rachamecha, Mishakan Oso, because he's turning God's precepts into mercy when they're just Gezeros. And the Rambam says, no, we don't follow that Gemara, we should investigate. However, there's a problem. The Rambam wrote a second work called the Yad HaChazaka. It's a work of halacha. It's a work where he records all the different halachas found in the Talmud. And in Hilchos Tefillah, in the laws of Tefillah, he writes, if a person gets up to say Shmon Esrei, and he gets to Chazar Seshatz, and he says, Misha in source 11, Misha Amar B'tach Nunim, Misha Rache Malkan Tzipor, he was God, the God who has mercy on the bird, Shlo Likach Eim Alabonim, that does not allow you to take the babies in front of the mother. Or does not allow the calf and the cow to be shechted, slaughtered on the same day. Yirachi, he should have mercy on us, the great God who has to be so merciful. The kiyotz b'inin zeh mishtaken oso. We silence him. A person who says, Al kantzipi yagir rachamecha, says the Rambam, we silence him. What? A minute ago, we just said the Rambam's Maimonides said, we don't follow that Gemara. There's a reason behind each and every decree. And now he's like, no, Mishakan Oso, make your mind up. What's going on here? How can it be the Rambam when one literally turns around and says, we're going to look into every single reason for the mitzvah? And now he's like, actually, no. Mitzvahs are just decrees. They're a yoke on our necks. They're just to show obedience. What's going on here? The Tosfos Yom Tov from Gershom Shaul Yom Tov Lipman ben Nathan Halevi Heller, source 12. I always imagine, if you think of his bris, you know, the rabbi goes, what do you want to call your kid? And the guy's like, Rabbi Gershon Shaul, Yom Tov Lipman ben Nathan Halevi Heller. The rabbi definitely took a couple of times and was like, you joking? Really? Whatever. People have long names. So he explains the following of Cook, who was the first chief rabbi of Palestine, of Israel. He says as well. He says, when it comes to philosophy, when it comes to hypothesizing, when it comes to the Mor Nevuchim, there is room to think. There is room to conjecture. There is room to try to figure out maybe I can know what God's reason is, and hopefully it will be something that lends value to my life. However, when it comes to halacha, when it comes to when you're sitting there and davening and shul, then we have to have certainty. And we can never have certainty why God commands. And therefore, we just say, it's an olat savara. Meaning, he says, there is a room and there's place to investigate and try to figure out why is it God commanded each and every command and try to glean a valuable lesson for our life. But at the same time, we have to also recognize that we can never ultimately know God's reasons. We can guess, we can hope to figure out we can never actually know. And therefore, we have to also know deep down that we fulfill God's command because he commanded them. The Maharal, which we're not going to have time to say, says very similar. He says God commands things because he's a melech. He's gozer on us as a king decrees on us. However, he says there's two parts to this. God commands us because it's good for us. God tells each and every mitzvah is going to affect us. However, our approach has to be we just do them because we are commanded. So we can know in our heart of hearts that the only reason God commanded it of us is because it's going to benefit us, because it's going to make us a better person, or it's going to help build a community, or it's going to make us feel good, whatever reason you want to give. But the way we act and our mindset has to be, but despite all that, we do these things because God commanded it. And therefore, we can get around and obviate all the risks involved. Because even if we say, you know what, I don't think the Rambam's reason applies. I know it's much more unhealthy to eat kugel that's been left out for 12 days straight with herring mixed inside it. So I just can't keep going. It's not about the keeping kosher. It's not about the reason. It's about fulfilling God's command. We say in Shemone Esrei, three times a day, we say, Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu. Say, God, you're my God and the God of my forefathers. And someone once pointed out, perhaps the idea is that we say, God, you're Elokeinu. You're my God. I'm going to personalize you. I'm going to make you close. I'm going to try to figure out how what you've taught me relates to me. But you're also Elokei Avoseinu. Ultimately, even if I can't personalize, even if I have trouble, even if I can't figure it out, you're Elokei Avoseinu. You're the same person who my fathers. And the Mesorah, the tradition I received, that's also why I'm doing what I'm doing. Not just because it makes sense to me, but sometimes because this is the tradition I've been handed down. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in a piece, Ma Enosh, he says it's very powerful. The Drup, source 14, I think 14 or 13, I don't know if our numbers got mixed up. The Jew profoundly believes that God's law was given for man's good, and he acts and is bound to act upon that belief. We should investigate. We should try to figure out how it's for our good. But, however, he does not flinch even when it induces pain. Obedience would mean little if it were purely selective. Yet obedience is the least which the Jew, both as a created spiritual being and as the recipient of the divine Torah, owes and prefers to God. His assessment of what is ready to give, of what he is ready to give, is made in the light of the ultimate knowledge that even the whole world, as the Yerushalmi would have it, does not equal in value one item of Torah. We know deep down, says Rav Aaron, that God only commands us things that are good for us. We also have to recognize that we do things because we're obligated. We do things because there is a sense of it being a decree, being a gezeira. Not to the exclusion of not having a reason, but as part of our mindset and our orientation to why we fulfill the mitzvos. Rabbi Jeremy Weider, a resident of Teaneck, New Jersey, for those of you who are from Teaneck on this call, you feel a little pride, a Rosh Hashiva in YU, he pointed out that there's, again, our tension of Al Tansipur Yagi Rachamecha. God says, one who says the bird, the mercy of the bird, that God chose the bird, look at the praise God, we say Meshachan or so, versus Lo Nitnu at Torah Litzavas Abrios, the Torah was only given to refine us, that there's a reason for the mitzvos. This tension we've been discussing, this tension of the opinion of Rashi who says, don't investigate, and the opinion of the Rambam says, do investigate. He says there's a third Chazal, there's a third Gemara that brings these two together. The Gemara says, Gadol ha-metzuvah ve'osa mimesha enum metzuvah ve'osa. Greater is a person who acts because they are commanded than one who volunteers and acts, which seems a little counterintuitive. If I'm commanded to do something, so if I do it because I'm commanded, whether if I volunteer to do something, I should be lauded. Look, I didn't have to, and I chose to do whatever I volunteered for. What's going on here? Why is the mitzvah, one who's commanded, why is that considered better? Rabbi Weider points out, because Chazal are conveying to us, our sages are teaching us, that mitzvahs may have different functions. As we've said, mitzvahs may make us a better person, a more sensitive person. I give charity. When I think about the poor, when I leave the corners of my field, when you harvest a field, I have to leave the corners for the poor people. I can't harvest them, I just leave them there. All these things are inculcated in us, values of, and sensitivities for other people. Mitzvahs make us join as part of a community. Mitzvahs may make us feel better. Mitzvahs have so many different reasons, But ultimately, the reason we do things is because of mitzvah, because gadol mitzvah, because kasher tziva, because we are commanded. So despite all the reasons, we do things because we are commanded. And sometimes we may be challenged, but ultimately it comes back to kasher tziva because we are commanded. And he pointed so powerfully. Our ancestors gave up their lives for Torah, not because of the reason behind the mitzvot, but merely because kasher tziva, because God commanded them. That is what it ultimately comes down to. So as we wrestle and we struggle, and we try to find meaning in each and every mitzvah, we have to also recognize that there's this theme and underlying all of it, that no matter what our conclusions are, kasher tziva, that we are commanded, that it's a gezerah, not in the sense that we don't have reasons, but in the sense that ultimately everything falls on that we are a commanded person, a mitzvah is a command, and that's what it comes down to. So thank you very, very much for joining me tonight, and open for questions.